Okay, so my name's David White. I'm Head of Digital Learning at the University of Arts London, and I'm with...
I'm John Martin. I'm an arts educator at the University of Arts and teach on various courses, and I'm also a research student here too.
So recently we put together an event called Network Making, because these were two themes that we felt were important. The idea of networks... and what they might be and how they relate to something that's certainly important at UAL, which is the process of making. And people came to that from the University of Arts London and other people from other universities around the country. And sort of to kick that off, we designed a very interactive activity. Could you describe what it was?
Yeah, so it was essentially we constructed a or the beginnings of a space which was some pegboard panels strategically placed around the lecture theatre space, and with those pegboard panels there were some prompts, and there was a bunch of materials, really importantly, a bunch of stuff, some paracord, string, pegs, dowel, clips, luggage tag labels, things that people could utilise to begin to visualise networks in response to the various prompts on these panels.
Yeah, and we were reasonably open with that. We asked Sheena Calvert and a couple of her students to help us facilitate that session. But we didn't really tell people specifically what we wanted them to do with that space.
Yeah.
There were some labels on some of the pegboard areas. I think there was like tools, and there was one that was called like desires or something like that, and maybe one that was called work. But other than that, we literally said build a network, or your network, and that's what people started to do. So there must have been about 30 odd people.
Yeah,
there.
I think so.
And how would you describe? I mean, there's images next to this this recording that you can see, and a very short video, so you see for yourself. But how would you describe what then happened?
I think with all these things, you have an idea about setting something up and providing some materials. And suggesting that people get on with things, so that the idea and the prep is there, but you never know actually what is going to happen, and it could can go in all sorts of ways, and it could fall flat. What actually happened was that really quickly people started grabbing stuff and experimenting with the kind of the physical objects, with the pegboard panels and these other objects that were around the space, to think about the possibility of joining things up, of physically making, I suppose, a connection, a web, a network of physical material between these different things, and then putting these labels on. But probably most importantly, what went on was it was a lot of talking. I kind of was walking around looking at different people getting into really strange, interesting, personal conversations about the things that they were either doing or thinking, or problems that they were having, or situations they were in. One thing that I really loved was that one person became an additional element in this space. So one person started getting string wrapped around him.
Yeah.
So he became a physical living part of this visualized network. And it was just a very fast and fluid and, personalised, I guess, response to the situation that people found themselves in. People kind of seemed to embrace it, which was really exciting.
And in terms of... So let's just sort of think about our motivations for setting it up.
Mm.
Because, I mean, I've got no doubt that people found it useful, whether that was through the sort of the making or the conversations or how they related. But, there's a reason why we decided to do that, and I think that reason was I'm not sure how to put it, whether it was a sort of teaching and learning reason or a collaborative reason. I mean, for me,
how about all of those?
I suppose for me, the point was that it was more than just a kind of way of getting people out of their seats. And I felt like if we were going to do an event on network making, then we should be making some networks, and to do that in a very particular sense. So what I was keen on was creating the conditions in the room for people to make a network. And I think, you know, a couple of things happened to me. For me, is people started making that network literally with bits of cord and string and pegs, but it was clear, as you're saying, through conversations, that people were making a network between themselves that sort of operated in parallel or intersected what they were making.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure to... I'm pretty confident that was effective in terms of helping people to make connections amongst themselves because they were making something physical. And my feeling is that there were positive aspects to what happened that went way beyond what I'd think of as the post-it note paradigm. Mm-hmm. There was something, because people had to get up and connect things together physically, I think it helped create a stronger connection between them.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's conversationally or psychological. I wouldn't like to say.
I think there's a bunch of stuff going on there, and I think that, you know, when you talked about the rationale for doing it being teaching and learning, being collaboration, it's absolutely all of that. But it's also the fact that this environment is a making environment.
Mean the university?
The university in general. Yeah. University Arts is a place with making in inverted commas at its core.
Yeah.
Creative endeavour will make a product, whether that's a thing or a performance or a sound. You know, something is being physically or
something's being produced.
Something is being produced,
and it's not necessarily text.
No, although
it could be,
it can be as part of something.
Yeah.
But in a making environment, I think part of the rationale for this is understanding that in a place where you are making and where you're using stuff, material, again, all these terms inverted commas, to produce something, that different sorts of conversations and thinking and ideation go on, because you are responding to the stuff and talking to people on a fairly basic level about the stuff, and the stuff can be a wonderful conversation starter. You know, what do you do with this? How do I get into this? How do I use this?
Yeah.
It's a far more...
And there was definitely a kind of negotiation going on between people as to how to negotiate that proposition and that space and those materials.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one person went off and did all the work, if you like. You could see people gently responding to each other to sort of co-make in that sense.
Gently responding to one another, but also gently responding to the materials. And I think that the materiality of this thing is so important. You know, you talk about the post-it note paradigm. You know, this thing of, okay, we're going to do an activity, and there are going to be post-it notes, and there are going to be felt-tip pens. And we kind of understand that we get our post-it note and we kind of put our marks on that post-it note and we stick it on the wall. And that's great. But actually, if you're presented with some other things that are unusual and told to respond to them, you also have to do a bit of figuring out of what they are. Mm-hmm. And you can do that haptically. You know, you can kind of feel your way through it, or you can look at things, or you can respond to things sensually, or you can talk to other people about what you might do with those and what they mean to them and what they might have done with them. And I think a lot of the making that came out of it in that sort of networked activity was perhaps the sharing of experience, the sharing of, you know, how you might have used this in other situations, or how things can be transferred from one environment to another environment, which is kind of what happens in a studio. You know, you bring in your experiences, you bring in your stuff, and there's part of the affordance of that space is realizing that there might be other ways to use something, that do something different, that give you a different kind of effect or a meaning or take you somewhere else, which is kind of fundamentally what this is about, right? Kind of taking you somewhere different.
Well, and I think, and I wonder if there's something that's not as well understood as it could be, which is the idea of thinking through making, mm-hmm. rather than making being the result of thinking, if you like. I think it's better understood with text, in that you might, in that you, your ideas might develop through the process of writing. I don't know.
Well, that's interesting.
Well,
yeah.
Well, that's a huge area, obviously. Yeah. But I think, but that idea, I mean, the that principle of thinking, the value of thinking through making, mm-hmm. rather than thinking then making, was important. Is to me an important aspect of what goes on at this university.
Absolutely.
Which. I think could apply well beyond the disciplines that we have here. And in higher education, I suppose in an academic context, I often feel is sort of diminished. Its importance is diminished because there's something that is... It's slightly Cartesian in the sense that it, because it involves the body, it can't be intellectual or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And I also think that links to our sort of responses to ideas of play as well and experimentation. Mm. So for me, what happened was that environment was partially designed to sort of have that thinking through making affordance to it, and it was definitely doing that. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of us could necessarily specifically say what people took away from it, but they were obviously, I think inspired's the wrong word, but that you could see people, their minds were awake.
There was an engagement, right? People were talking and thinking and doing. That to me indicates an engagement. It wasn't just kind of an instrumental, we are painting by numbers here.
Yeah.
That kind of teleological, you know, aim. Hmm. There was none. The aim was the process. The aim was to actually engage. And there was fundamentally, people were physically, hopefully mentally, intellectually, I would say so, stimulated in doing stuff. So yeah, without a doubt. Because there was that invitation to kind of explore without a sense of what this was intended to be. There were prompts.
Okay, so there were prompts, and we had introduced the event,
yep.
and people had turned up to the event knowing it was about network making. There was a bit of blurb on the webpage where you signed up. But it was... I mean, I was keen to keep it fairly ambiguous because I actually wanted the thinking around what network making is to sort of emerge across the day, mm-hmm. rather than do that kind of... slightly university thing of saying, well, we know what this is, so you can turn up and hear us tell you. I wanted to be at the other end of that continuum, but I just wanted to pick up on something that you were saying, because this for me is crucial in terms of teaching and learning. Is I found it quite distressing just how open the thing was, because my instinct was, if you don't give people enough instruction or enough scaffolding, mm-hmm. the chances are they'll just, you know, you go, hey, here's some stuff, mm-hmm. pegboards, mm. start making a network.
Yeah.
And then there's this fear that everybody will go, what?
What are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to be doing?
Yeah. Now, obviously, everybody in the room was, you know, I think that room certainly skewed towards people that were comfortable at owning that interpretation and they had quite a lot of agency. I don't know what would happen if you did that in rooms with different groups of people, mm-hmm. students who are studying at different levels. I don't know. Mm-hmm. From what I saw, I think it would still work. But I'm just acknowledging that there was a teaching and learning risk.
Oh yes.
As far as I was concerned.
Yes.
And I can remember I was talking to Catherine, who'd helped organise the event. Mm. After it kicked off, and talking about all sorts of practical things, and I looked around from our conversation, about 2 minutes after we'd asked people to start, and there were just people everywhere with scissors and cord and all the rest of it. And I have a very clear memory of going, oh, it's working! Yeah. I don't know exactly what's happening, but it's working!
Yeah.
And like this massive amount of anxiety just fell away from me.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like the easiest thing we could have done that day.
It's not. And I think that, again, that's part of... You're right, I think we have become... I think in this environment we are possibly slightly more comfortable with that sense of uncertainty and with that sense of trusting that something will emerge through the process and then being able to judge that on its merits in relation to our marking criteria and our you know, matrices around... You know how we judge success.
Yeah.
But I think that this approach to allowing that to happen is incredibly healthy in the higher education environment, because as we increasingly get to a place where we are looking for proof, we need, I think, to understand that the proof can be negotiated. And that proof is demonstrable in all sorts of different ways. And actually your way might be text, and my way might be image. And there is a negotiation between these things that allow us to perhaps see things on their merits and to judge what we've got from something for ourselves. And to say, well, actually, you know, this is... All this process, Dave, this process of kind of... playing with stuff and trying stuff out, and the mess that is made in that works because there is a recognition of the importance of reflection in action, reflection on action, a kind of a process of analysis, self-analysis of what you've done and what you've made and what the meaning is of what you have made for you. So in a way, you can set something up. You know, you and I can have an idea and we can have a conversation. We can go, yeah, that sounds really interesting for these reasons. And we'll kind of put these things in place. But you're then inviting people to come along and respond to it, not knowing how they will respond to it. And there is definitely an anticipation in that, because it could go in all sorts of ways. But I think the thing to recognise is that you're working with people who have agency in their different ways, and maybe our role as facilitators or educators or people putting on an event is to allow people to come and to bring and to respond and to encourage them to then go away and think about what they've done. As you say, you know, the invitation is there, and there's a kind of a scaffold into the day. To a session, to a course, to a curriculum, where you say, you know, we're going to be looking at this stuff, and you'll probably kind of get some of this stuff out of it. But actually, what people will get out of it has to be negotiated by them. And I think that whatever the educational level, we have to recognise that people will find different things in these experiences, and we need to support them to realise what they have found, which is of relevance to them in their practice, in their discipline, in their ongoing exploration of this territory. It can't be prescribed. You know, you can have the matrices in place, but the matrices are there to support rather than to tell people what they're doing.
Yeah, and so, absolutely, and so in that sense, You're creating the conditions for making and the conditions for reflection. Mm. And I think I don't think that's necessarily an easy place for people. I'm sure some of the people undertaking the activity that we sort of kicked off, if you like, or set in motion, some people stood a little bit further away from it.
Yes.
Some people stuck one thing to it and then went and sat down.
Yes.
Some people stood around chatting, watching other people making things. And so there's a kind of a recognition there that people will engage in different ways.
Yeah.
And that you can't... I mean, this is something that I find with the digital, is that you end up fetishizing very particular forms of engagement. and forgetting that there are multiple forms of engagement, like sitting and watching everybody else and thinking about it.
Except in the digital, there are terms for that, right? That are recognised and understood, and there is an appreciation of that. I mean, fetishizations all over the place.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, we do. I think we recognise across the board that there are lots of ways of engaging.
Well, I suppose what I'm saying is that's part of the ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Is for me, in the role of facilitator or educator, is recognising that there's an ambiguity as to how I can interpret how people are responding to something. Mm. You know, so there's no right way in my mind of how people should respond. I mean, apart from the fact that I wanted people to get stuck in one sense or another.
I think you probably wanted to see people feeling that they could get stuck in.
Yeah.
I think you probably wanted to feel that people felt they had a sense of being able to be there. But as you say, those people who chose to hang back or chose to observe, and I was one of those, because you know I wanted to see what was going on. Mm-hmm. That's a really lovely space to be. And it doesn't mean that you're not taking all sorts of stuff from what's going on. Ambiguity is, again, I think we're probably more comfortable with that notion of ambiguity in this environment than other higher education establishments might be, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, doesn't it to a certain extent come down to not walking into that room with... I think this is what I'm trying to say, is that I had to be careful not to have preconceptions about what the correct way was to engage in that activity. And I think that for ambiguity to exist, and therefore for there to be a space for people to reflect and interpret, if you like, you have to be careful to question whether you've decided that you know what the right answer is or a good answer is.
Yeah.
You have to be able to allow that to emerge. Now, for me personally, because of the kind of way I'm wired, I suppose you could say, I had to constantly police that in my own mind.
Yeah.
Because and you could see from the way I was writing notes about just putting together the activity that everything I was doing was in response to a kind of assumed version of success.
Yeah.
And it was a real struggle for me. It was quite anxious, a real struggle for me to put that down and say and acknowledge there are lots of different versions of success, and there are lots of different forms of value that people might take away from this, different ways they might engage. And to allow that to happen was definitely a relinquishing of control. And I'm thinking in terms of, you know, pedagogically, I suppose, it wasn't especially comfortable until I saw what was happening.
Yeah, and then that gave you a sense of making to which you then responded. I mean, you kind of responded intellectually, emotionally, creatively. But I think that relinquishing of control is really interesting, because I think that's another sort of negotiation. It's a self-negotiation. We're constantly negotiating our values and our wants and our desires and our expectations. And you know, you've talked, you know, a lot about being comfortable and not being comfortable and it being difficult. And I think these are things that actually we might we might gloss over, or we might pretend that actually education should be comfortable and straightforward and easy and aim.
I think for me it comes down to that notion of risk. Mm. Is that it's easy to talk about, and we like the idea of risk.
Oh yeah.
But the lived experience of it isn't, hey, I'm being risky. The lived experience of it is, oh, this could just be a disaster.
Am I completely wrong?
Oh, and also, am I just being unprofessional?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. Because I can't predict what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know how people are going to respond. I had all kinds of little backup plans in my mind, little speeches I was going to make if it just went silent.
I'm glad you did.
Well, I suspected you wouldn't, because you're better at taking a... I think you're probably more comfortable with those ambiguous situations because of the work that you do relative to the kind of work I do. That might not be the case. But I suppose it's important to acknowledge that it's easy to talk about these forms of education and working in ambiguity and having a very open activity and giving people materials and without expectations for what they do, but actually it's a harder path to take than standing up and giving a talk or doing a more... I suppose it depends who you
it
are.
Really,
it's harder for me.
Who you are. Yeah, absolutely. I would much rather be in a space where people are kind of doing stuff and finding out what they're doing and not finding out what they're doing and then responding to everything going wrong than I would be with, you know, a kind of a bunch of stuff that I know I have to put across at the beginning and I've got to get...
Well, I'm not even sure. I mean, I'm not even convinced you have a notion of things going wrong. I think you just have a notion of things happening. Or...
Yeah, but if things... I suppose if things don't happen, then that is things going wrong. And so maybe the stuff that I have in my back pocket is ways to kind of prompt people to make things happen, to make other things happen when the thing that I've wanted to happen isn't happening.
Yeah.
So again, it's another kind of form of negotiation of actually, yeah, I have... We all have expectations. We all walk into a pedagogic environment with a sense of what's going to go on and what we want to get out of it. And sometimes we are... satisfied, and mostly we get something different from what we expect. But I think there's always this sense of, right, so where are we at, and therefore what needs to happen next?
Yeah.
Because it's really difficult to see the arc of a session. Really difficult for me to see the arc of a session. I just, you know, I've got a sense of what I want, what I'd like to be going on. But it will always be dependent on who's there and what's there and what goes on and what people have for breakfast that morning, you know?
Yeah. No, I think it's a refreshing way to look at it. And just to put a kind of more sort of... maybe a slightly more corporate higher education hat on, if you like. We got evaluation forms back. Mm. And most people really enjoyed that activity and got... a lot out of it, some people less so. And I think, you know, it's one of the bits of it that was open was the fact that we don't actually know specifically what people took away from them.
Yeah.
So we were in the mildly luxurious position of, you know, it wasn't assessed, apart from the fact that it's like a quasi-social environment, so everything's assessed.
Yes.
Because when you're watching somebody attach a piece of string from a board that says desire to... a board that says work, it's not like people aren't thinking about it.
Yeah. Because assessment is finding meaning in things, right? And assessing is evaluating what's going on, right?
Yes, absolutely. But I suppose one of the reasons that I felt like... that I felt we could take that approach was because... we didn't have a structured aim,
yes.
If you like, that was perhaps... So for example, we didn't have that kind of structure that would come with an assessed unit or module or something,
yes.
Like that. Now, that's not to say that you can't operate in that way within those kind of structures, and people do all the time around UAL. But again, I just wanted to recognise the particular environment we were in,
yeah.
in that sense. So it was... We have to accept that we can't quantify what people took away from that.
We did.
And that's sort of part of it. So there's trust in that way.
Yeah. Trust, absolutely. But also, yeah, trust and belief. Because you know, we stand back and assess and look at, you know, look at kind of what came out of it in terms of the conversation. And those feedback forms and think, yeah, okay, that sort of did certain things. But actually, and again, so much of what happens in these environments isn't immediately obvious. And the learning that goes on and the creativity that goes on and the making that goes on beyond and outside. And I think as educators we have this sense of we need to have this overview of what people have done and what they have got out of it, and it all needs to be recorded so that it is...
Like it's a hermetic thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course there are really good rationales for that.
Yeah.
But we also have got to trust and believe that a lot of that learning continues to go on. And that an experience that you had 6 months or 3 years ago will suddenly spark something different in you. You will suddenly make a connection. You'll find a way of drawing on that in something else that you're doing. So I think that for me it's really important that people... I really love the fact that those people got to have that experience, because actually I believe and trust that it will do something further. However, the people that didn't get to have that experience can still draw on what they saw, because there are records of what went on. There are records of what went on in terms of images, in terms of conversation, in terms of things that people will say to other people about what they did. And that will actually, hopefully, I mean, this is where creative education sort of becomes pretty unaccessible. Mm. It becomes something that morphs gradually and in ways that we can't quite see into other things. Things feed into other things. It's the thing about networks, right?
Yeah.
Networks feed other nodes. And there are things that come off those. That sort of the mind map analogy of having things that spark all sorts of different connections that go into different places, which have got nothing to do with the thing that's at the centre. But they're all vitally important, right? And I think that if we're looking at what happens in a session, we then have a responsibility maybe to remember and remind and explore and talk about what we have found in other ways. So the notion of why do academics publish? Why do people kind of talk about this stuff that's their own bit of research interest? And surely the point is to share and explore and allow other people to look and respond in a different way to somebody else's experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And whilst this is a kind of our reflection on what we thought the sort of meaning of that activity was at one level, we're not specifically talking about the substance of the idea of network making. Mm-hmm. This is more of a kind of a reflection from a different perspective. But your point about connections, I think, is one that bears considering. Mm-hmm. in the sense that one of the reasons that event was called network making is because of that idea that we make in networks, and that we make networks. Mm. And that good things come from making connections. Mm. You know, whether that's between people, across subjects, across disciplines. Mm. And also that we sort of reside to a certain extent in those networks, whether that's, you know, at work or online or whatever it might be. Mm. And that that one of the things that's intriguing is that we all visualise those networks differently. We don't actually have a particularly shared understanding of them. Mm. You know, one person visualises a network as a collection of wires and satellites and stuff like that. Another person visualises it as clusters of people. Mm. And everything in between. But actually, that the principle of the network has become fundamental to how we become and exist, right? Yeah. And this all gets terribly philosophical, all the rest of it, very quickly. But it's intriguing to me that activity, to come back to the activity, we were physically making a network, but also obviously there was a non-physical network forming between the people in the room, which was, and that's something that's important to me, because for me, picking up on what you're saying there, is the role of a significant part of the role of higher education is to create the environment and the conditions for connections.
Yes.
And that activity was like a microcosm of that philosophy, if you like.
Mm. Because some of it was very physical and visual and obvious and accessible. And some of it was inferred, and some of it was suggested, and some of it is unseen. Some of it is a purely internal connection that people are making. Because actually, all this stuff that we're talking about, whether it's kind of physical material or ideas or other people who have, I don't know, things that you can discuss and explore, they are the stuff of education. All this stuff is the stuff of education. Our education is not, you know, we might be learning a particular discipline. We might be, you know, exploring a particular subject. And there are therefore things that are kind of fundamental to be looking at in that. But actually the education is all around that. The education is a process of seeing how those things fit within the wider subject and seeing how that wider subject fits within the wider world. And seeing how you can negotiate your path through that subject, through that discipline, through that set of skills that you're acquiring, or that set of ideas that you are assimilating, and how you can put those things together.
And not just assimilating, but generating.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would be the hope, right?
Yes.
Is that you know, ambiguity, if we think about that in from a pedagogical point of view, is not there to through a lack of planning. It's there deliberately because it increases the probability that people will be generating their own thinking rather than simply assimilating other people's.
Yeah.
Now, it's a combination of both in education. I wouldn't want to say that it was one or the other, but I think certainly by the time you're in higher education, at least some of it should be a space that is ambiguous enough that it allows you to become.
Yeah, I think that's, God, I think that's so interesting. I think that that the higher education environment is a space of transition. It's a space of moving from compulsory education to a world, maybe of professional practice.
I'm not sometimes
sure. I mean, that's a massively complex idea, but you know, to a world of beyond compulsory education, and higher education is this space which has got some scaffolding and some structure and some assessment points and some matrices and some, you know, kind of useful wider disciplinary subject material in it that you are negotiating. But the I don't know, I suppose the notion of being in this space is to work out how you take it and use it to go forward into whatever else is out there for you. So there's this sort of. I think higher education is probably a space of ambiguity, because we can't ever be quite sure what we're going to get from an education. We can't ever be sure what you know the institution is going to offer us, what a particular session is going to help us to learn. Because, you know, back to that thing of agency and individuals and particulars, we come at it with a set of stuff, and we process the material that we find through our way of dealing with it, and we take from that and we go into something else, and hopefully with a kind of a stronger sense of who we are and what we're about, and that notion of, you know, that notion of what is to be, but
and also I think I'd hope a more nuanced worldview. I'd like to imagine
I think it's, I don't think a worldview cannot be more nuanced as a result of education.
Well, it depends on the education, doesn't it? But that would be my hope. And so, I'm just coming to this now through this conversation, is I think one of the reasons why I was keen to reflect on the network making activity and also try to be disciplined about making sure it was ambiguous is for me, whilst in one sense it was a bunch of people attaching string and pegs and labels to things, in another sense I think it was like a kind of reification or realization of some of the ideology or philosophy we're talking about. So it was like a realization of what higher education should or could be for me. You know, opinions vary on that.
Yeah.
And that's why I was really anxious about it. It was also why I was pleased when I saw some of the things we're talking about happening.
Mm.
And it would be, you know, and as I say, the people involved, some of those people were sort of masters of negotiating ambiguity. I don't think everybody was, though. If I'm going to look at it like almost selfishly, I was pleased that it became the thing that I, in that sense, that it represented stuff that was important to me about education.
Mm.
So it is just a little activity at an event that a few people did.
Yeah.
But it embodied quite a lot of stuff that I feels important about, certainly the way this institution operates, but also more broadly, things that I think that are important for the sector to consider around ambiguity, making, playfulness, reflection. And you know, as you're saying, that requires us to be comfortable to be not entirely in control, to take those kind of risks, but also it involves certain levels of trust and an acknowledgement that whilst you can sort of quantify the value, as you say, through assessment, and that's important, you're not going to be able to quantify everything that happened.
Mm.
You know, it's always going to be greater than what you can apply a framework to, which is actually quite encouraging, I suppose.
I would say it's hugely encouraging. I would say that you know, I think I'm really pleased that it did embody to some extent the things that you hoped for, and I think that's where sometimes risk pays off, is that you are able to be satisfied that things have done something that you hope that they might.
Well, I want to go and interview everybody who took part and find out what they thought about it.
Yeah.
But I you know, I'm not going to have that opportunity, and in some senses you just got to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm confident that...
You saw it at the time, right?
Yeah, I saw it at the time. You could feel it in the room.
Yes.
I mean, I'm using that word deliberately. You could sense it in the room, not evenly across everyone, but you could sense that what we'd done is create some conditions that encourage people to kind of explore, you know, roughly around themes that were to do with that day.
Mm-hmm.
And so by, you know, it took me a long time to recover from that event.
Mm-hmm.
But on reflection, I'm confident in going, that did what I hoped it would do,
mm-hmm.
even though I deliberately didn't hope for anything specific. It's in hindsight I can say it did.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I think that's fairly new for me, actually.
Hmm. So given that recognition of the process, how would you encourage people to explore those sorts of things that they're wanting to in ways that they're slightly uncertain about the outcome of? I mean, might there be a, I don't know, what can you take from that that you could...
I think, yeah, that's a really good question. And there are a number of things. I think the first one is, you know, don't see ambiguity as a lack. You know, it's not you being unprofessional or not planning. Ambiguity is like this very delicate potential that you're putting into the room, quite an exciting potential. So there's that, you know, trust in ambiguity, if you like. I think the other thing's trust as well is trust in the people that are engaging in it, that they do have agency, that they're capable of interpreting, that they'll bring something to it that you haven't thought of, and that will happen. And then I think you mentioned this to me before, and you were referring to a colleague who'd done a really good job of this, is the few sentences that you say to start something off are really important, and to really think those through in a way that will encourage people to play and explore, but not shut down the ambiguity. Because my temptation was to go, was to say those few sentences, and then there's a little gap, and I go, so you could get some scissors, and you could get a bit of string, and you could put it there, and then you could put that there. It's just an example. I'm just making an example here. And I didn't, and that was a good thing, but it took a lot of effort to not go, and now I'm going to explain how I do this.
Yeah.
So I suppose the short version of the answer is trust.
Mm-hmm. And preparation.
It's a weird form of preparation. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
You have to do a lot of, you have to put a lot of thought in it.
Yeah.
Into it, and then it doesn't produce very much stuff. Mm. Right. So you know, I didn't give a 20-minute talk. I said about 3 or 4 sentences. And there was part of me that wanted to go, this took a lot of work, actually. It took a long, you know, it might look like some pegboards of string and me just saying 3 sentences, but this took a lot of, there was a lot of discussion between you, myself, Sheena, her students, a lot of note writing, I drew diagrams, you know, and then you get to the room and you're like, okay, we're going to do this thing, off you go.
And we spent a day in a workshop making stuff.
We spent a day in the workshop actually making stuff.
Preparing stuff for the making event.
And dragging bits of wood down a road in Camberwell / Peckham.
Yeah.
So, and it was a really hot day. So what, I'm trying to answer your question. So I think you just have to be comfortable. You've got to step back and trust that people are going to respond. But that's not to say, as you rightly point out, that there's a lot of preparation involved in creating those spaces where that can happen. And I'd argue probably, and this is why it's difficult, probably more preparation than doing a straight workshoppy sort of session.
Yes, it probably is.
It was really hard work.
And as you say, you can be very much less certain of the outcome of it.
Yeah, because there's the risk.
It's a huge risk, or there is the ambiguity as well, because you're putting in this work for possibly no return, except you can be fairly confident if you have thought it through and you're doing it for the right reasons, and your beliefs in why you're doing it and why you're presenting it in this way are strong. I think you can probably have a degree of belief, trust, that actually something will happen, but you might not see it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So there's trust in ambiguity, there's trust in the agency of the people that you're working with.
Yeah.
There's the kind of humility in not going on about a stepping back, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
But there's also a sense of sincerity to it.
Yeah.
And that it needs to intersect with your own beliefs around what you think education is. Otherwise, it becomes a piece of play for the sake of play.
Yeah.
And I think people are very sensitive to that. So, I mean, I know, you know, we've all been in sessions where you're like, let's do a fun thing. And then after 10 minutes, they go, right, we're going to stop doing this fun thing and actually do the thing.
Yeah.
And you can feel it, can't you?
Yep.
Now, my hope is, with the way that we approach this, is that it was clear that this was both a kind of playful thing, but also integral to the point of the day.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the thing that we did to warm up before we did the thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know how people would have... Some people might have responded to it that way.
Maybe. But I think the point that you make, or we make about preparation is really important, because I think as educators we spend a lot of time complaining about the amount of preparation that we go in, that we put into sessions.
Sure.
That isn't recognised.
Right.
And isn't something that we don't get any thanks for it. And I'm coming to realise, this is a hypothesis maybe, that actually the preparation is really our creative endeavour, the work that we are doing. So, you know, we spent time preparing it. It was hard work. It was fun though. You know, the kind of the conversation around it and the bouncing ideas back and forth and the physically constructing things, it's fun. And I think very often we overlook this is me, right? But very often we overlook the importance of process. We very often kind of think that you know, we've got to get to the end and the product that we deliver is the thing that's going to be seen, and that's the kind of the crux of the matter. But actually the preparation that goes into something when you are batting those ideas around and are kind of working out sort of what you're trying to achieve and sort of what you want people to experience and why that is, that's incredibly important to us as educators. If we're going to be working in this environment where we're talking to people about ideas and you know, making stuff. Ideas is also stuff, right? It's also material that we have. And the process of planning and dismissing and saying, you know what, I could say a whole load of stuff around this and I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna leave it in that place. I'm gonna leave it unsaid. I can sit in my back pocket if you want. And it's there for later or whatever else. Same thing we say to students, you know, not every idea has to be represented in the thing that you produce. You select.
Yeah.
You kind of and the process of thinking and generating and then editing and then selecting and then choosing and then thinking, well, this is the reason, and that sort of sense of, you know, this is why I'm here. I'm here because I want to kind of do something with you. And I hope you're here because you want to do something, and then we'll do something, and I'll get something from it, and you'll get something. You know, that's where the negotiation comes in. Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good place to sort of wrap this up, because
in the preparation.
The preparation, yeah. Well, I mean, I think that idea of the preparation is the work, or is a large part of the work, and that education isn't a product in that sense is quite helpful and positive, and it certainly helps me think differently about some of my approaches towards work, whereby I don't recognise the work that I'm doing because I've forgotten that it's that process that makes the thing, right? And you can easily get drawn into that if you're writing something or if you're putting together a lecture or a talk or something like that, and it becomes quite producty.
Yep.
And so the longer that you prepare, the more you feel like you're failing.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's just personal to me, but I'm like, how come this took me 4 hours? It should have only taken me 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Begins to feel like a failing because I'm thinking about the product being the work, not the process being the work. And I mean work in the best possible sense. And I suppose when it comes to the network making activity, that we went through a process to sort of make appear, if you like, because I don't want to use the word produce now, that activity clearly wasn't a product. It was the creation of a space that people could negotiate meaning in. Mm. And again, to me, that sounds like higher education, or I'd hope it's higher education.
Mm.
I think that's a good way of drawing this to a close.